Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Folklore Podcast. I'm Mark Norman, folklore researcher and author. Just a quick reminder before we begin that because we have so much great content lined up for you at the moment, we're going to be releasing an episode every week through this month of September. So make sure you keep an eye on our social media to see what comes out next. And remember, if we hit our next support goal on Patreon, which we're very close to now, we will be able to permanently increase the amount of free content we put out. Head on over to www.patreon.com/thefolklorepodcast to help us get there and access a whole back catalogue of extra content exclusive to supporters too. If you are a Patreon supporter, remember that you get discounts on every Folklore Podcast lecture as well. These are in-depth one-hour visual presentations via Zoom with expert speakers, followed by a Q&A session. And they're only £5, even before the discount. The next lecture is on Saturday the 19th of September, where Icy Sedgwick of the Fabulous Folklore Podcast will be discussing spiritualism and the Victorian desire to talk to the dead. You can get more details and book a place at bit.ly/TFP lectures. We are also co-curating a massive online event called Rural Gothic at the end of September. I'll give you more details on that at the end of this episode. In the meantime, we continue with part two of our big recording session with our other folklore and mythology themed podcast friends. In the last episode, you heard everyone's stories that they believed would win a vote on the best folklore story of the night. Here is our discussion and the final voting. Enjoy the episode.
Everybody, you may now unmute yourselves. Would anybody like to come straight in and either change their opinion from their own story to somebody else's, or defend what they had to say against anybody else's comments? Who wants to start the ball rolling?
Well, I just want to say, I didn't think that anyone could top swampy folk horror. And then we get 16-year-olds drinking beer out of skulls, and I think, how can you top that? And then Patricia Wilnecker, she comes along and she just wipes it all off the table and wins. I love it.
Lock up your sons.
Can I just clarify, just for legal reasons, the slaughtering that you referred to there, that didn't happen. He's fine. She didn't even hit him, according to her account of the story.
So. I believe her.
Yeah. But she would say that, wouldn't she?
It's a mysterious one. I like Spring Heel Jack a lot, but I can't help but feel he's just a gritty reboot of the London Monster, who did exactly the same stuff, but without the jumping, 100 years earlier in London. That's my challenge to Icy.
Mind you, he wasn't. He didn't vomit blue flames. He just vomited flames. So, you know.
And was he a demented gummy bear? Because that was the best bit for me.
Let's be fair. These guys are just entertaining sex attackers. He had he had knives attached to his knees that he used to poke women in the bottom. That was what the London Monster did.
Yeah, but don't we all do that? Oh, did I say that out loud?
So. My dash talking on this is that there's that really long history throughout the Victorian era, and Georgian era for that matter, of people going out in elaborate costumes being ghosts. And, you know, Spring-Heeled Jack's part of that long tradition. And I know in Australia they're often taking a lot of effort to construct these elaborate costumes and creating almost like supervillain personas, calling themselves the Wizard Bombardier or the Ballarat Ghost. And they're obviously enthralled. They're writing letters to the paper about, you know, you're never going to catch me. And people are putting out bounties for the £5 of the capture of any ghost in Ballarat grounds. And
how much they, how much the bounties?
£5 to capture a ghost in the grounds.
Oh,
of
right. I was going to say, what, now? £5 doesn't seem like much.
You'd be a bit insulted, wouldn't you, if that was your bounty?
I don't know. I don't know. I'd take it. If yeah. if someone put a bounty on me for £5, I'd turn myself in.
I'm thinking like Herbert Patrick McLennan's outfit. He wore a skin-tight suit soaked in glow-in-the-dark paint, a long white frock coat, paper mache mask, hideous paper mache mask to describe this, and a white slouch hat with the feather in it. And apparently he'd jump off buildings and scare women, expose himself, and then run up the building. When he was arrested, he turned out to be a local clerk, Herbert Patrick McLennan, and had his costuming, and he worked as an elocutionist, and he was apparently quite renowned for having a very proper received British accent.
Nice. I think if we can learn anything from these stories, though, David, I think the main thing that we can take away that people at those times didn't is that phosphorescent paint is carcinogenic.
I was going to say, what, were they using radium or something like that? They probably were all just mad.
I love the whole you pretend to be a ghost in something that's going to kill you. There's a certain irony to it. I'd love to hear
you have hurry
to
the process along somehow.
Very true. I see. Do you want to defend your Spring-Heeled Jack against Alistair's suggestion that it's just a reworking of another folkloric monster from 100 years previously?
Yeah, but with so much more style. So I think it's the breathing fire bit for me.
Fire, I think you'll find.
Yeah, I mean, bearing in mind, I come from a place where a kid in my school once tried to blow up a Bunsen burner. So I'm obviously going to be impressed by flames. Yeah, I just think that it's the fact that there's no evidence that he ever actually bounced anywhere. Because, like, somebody tried to work out if you could make the shoes work. And physics got in the way. And no, because you'd shatter your ankles. And I'm like, don't ruin the story. And that's why I think the Penny Dreadfuls are so cool. Because they're like, realism, no, we're just going to do our own thing. And then that's the bit that everybody repeats like it's true. And that's why I think he's got more literary flair, I think, than any of the ones that come before him. He's just awesome.
And what a lovely reading those Penny Dreadfuls and going, I can do that, and making a costume and going out and imitating it. And I just think that's fantastic. You know, reading these yarns and going, yep, sure, off I go, and doing their best to try and imitate the effect with theatre techniques and things from the period.
That's like early fan fiction.
Yeah.
Does no one else do that? Because I'm absolutely obsessed with the idea of floating along the coasts of Cornwall in like full Edwardian garb and just screaming at National Trust walkers. That was you.
Good
the
God,
thing the trip
woman.
Is, if I dressed up like that and was like going around Newcastle, I'm not 100% sure how many people would really notice.
Really? Oh. Yeah.
As a piece of folklore, to be fair, it did travel, and this anti-hero side did become essentially fan fiction. If you look at Czechoslovakia, the Czech Spring Man, which is a very, very powerful image, ends up in comic books as a kind of Nazi propaganda image. So, yeah.
I liked him when he was just attacking women, but now I know he's a Nazi. That's
yeah.
No, when it was the vomiting fire, on, it was all in good fun.
No. He's an anti-Nazi, not a Nazi.
Oh, well, then now I'm conflicted because he's he's got good and bad. It's shades of grey. I'm warming to this guy.
Yeah. He's multifaceted. I mean, that's what you want in a character, in a human, in a, you know, superhero.
Surely
I think he's all three.
Surely it can't be as simple as this, though, can it? Surely we can't just all go, okay, I see.
We can.
You win. Anybody want to defend themselves against Spring-Heeled Jack?
Yeah. I was just going to throw in one of my favourite Spring-Heeled Jack imitators was this lady I came across in Ballarat, and she's going out at night impersonating being a man, and when everyone, the way papers described it is when everyone was convinced that she's a man, she'd suddenly reveal herself to be a woman. And she was charged with indecent exposure, which can be some idea of what she might have been doing. She goes to the Ararat insane asylum, and she comes out a year and a half later and takes to dressing as a monster, hiding under the Peel Street Bridge and jumping out and attacking people when they cross it with long white robes
and goals.
A mask. Yes. You go, girl.
did she vomit blue flames?
No, she didn't vomit blue flames. She had a hideous paper mache mask and she threw things at people and screamed at them.
Nice.
It's an honest living, isn't it?
Seems reasonable. Yeah. Has anybody else got a strong contender amongst the field here as well? What do we think?
I do like the Mackenzie Poltergeist, and it won't surprise any of you, I think, to hear that I have actually gone to see if anything happened next to the tomb. And because I go like locked and loaded when I go places, I did take an EMF meter and it did nothing. So the science like was not there for me that day. But I just love all the stories and just, yeah, the idea of a couple of teenagers, yeah, drinking beer and being heavy metal. I like that.
That was my actual favorite story. And the drinking out of the skulls was a deal sealer for me, because it reminded me of my favorite Incan chief, who Pecha Kuti, who used to drink from their skulls and pull their teeth out. And
that's exactly who they were replicating.
I thought it was. Yeah.
And apparently, I don't know if you know, but if you drink WKD out of a skull, you vomit blue flame.
Really? But actually, what it did remind me of is the story of Nostradamus, who predicted his own death, but he also said that if someone was to drink out of my skull, you'd get the same powers as me. And 200 years after his death, his grave was dug up. And they pulled his skull out and they drank from it, and they said that they actually saw when their death was going to be, and it happened straight away as they both of them died of unexplained poisoning.
Mm-hmm. Sterilize your skulls, man. Clearly that's the moral of the story.
Yeah, don't share.
There's a lovely Finn McCool story in Irish folklore of Finn has a fool staying with him over the winter, and he's a good friend, perhaps because the fool's the only person who will really make fun of the great Finn McCool. But the fool sees this guy who's coming around and having a bit of fun with Finn's wife. So the guy who's coming around chops off the fool's head, and takes him home, sticks him up on a pole, invites all his friends around for a feast, and they're all having a great feast and having a good time. And the fool's head's just watching all this and just kind of putting up with it, like, oh, this isn't very good, but oh well. But then he serves the fool's head food last, and then the fool thinks, no, that is it, that is it. This is ridiculous. I was a friend of Finn McGough, I lived with him, and you're not serving me, you're serving me food last. I think that's great.
Was fine. Yeah,
decapitation. I can live with that, but Jesus, come on!
I mean, if we're talking severed heads, I can bring it straight back to the Mabinogion again, which is my nice Mabinogion map. At one point, Bran, the giant king of Britain, after his whole battle with Ireland, we won't get into that bit. He basically just has his head left, and there's only seven of his knights left. And I think they basically plant him in. Right in like the south of England to scare off the French. So anyone trying to invade England sees this great big giant head just staring at them. Love it.
I think he also entertained them with stories for 23 years on that journey. They're just the severed head.
Yeah, until, I love it.
But the legend said he would do that until they saw Cornwall, I think.
Until they have to open a door.
They have to open this door, and they're like, oh, should we open the door? No, let's just stay around with the head, tossing them between each other. And they play games with the head for 80 years. And they're like, we should open that door. Don't open the door. Oh, and then they open the door, and then That's it. And then they're like,
that's just Cornwall for you. That's how everyone treats Cornwall. Can we open the door? Nah, let's not bother.
Can we mix that in with the Inca chief and with the teenagers drinking out the skull and make a mega story?
Yes.
It's awesome.
Move it over to Dorset and Patricia Wilnecker should just kill a lot of them. Allegedly.
Yeah.
Mind you, Petra Kuti also used to make flutes out of their arms as well, so that was a nice touch.
So what you're saying, Alistair, is that you'd like it in Dorset?
Yes, I would. I bloody love the place. It's so hard to do. It's really very sophisticated humour. I have to say, the hoax factor appeals to me because, or rather the mystery around whether Jeff the Talking Mongoose is a hoax, because it's obviously a hoax on the face of it. But you're absolutely right that it's very hard to see who benefits in that story. It's very hard to see why there was a hoax. Nobody seemed to be enjoying it. They weren't trying to sell the farmhouse, as far as anyone could tell. It seems to stop after the dad dies, even though... And there are cases of the voice being heard when every one of them who could have been doing it wasn't there. And I've seen a sample of the hair of Jeff the Talking Mongoose in the collection of Harry Price. And it was tested and I think it's dog hair. But the point is, why would you go to that busted trouble?
That is the big question. Yes, you're right. The hair was dog hair. They'd taken prints in plasticine and sent those off to the Natural History Museum as well, who said, we can't identify these, presumably.
The real villain here is the Natural History Museum.
It's up again.
And those footprints aren't real. Those footprints aren't real. Let us have our fun.
Well, I did read one of the reasons, one of the theories is that she did it for retweets. So.
but you're absolutely right, Alistair.
That's biscuits.
Yeah.
Put a thing in her room with chocolate biscuits. She's like, hey, it's a mongoose. Take the chocolate biscuits.
To be fair, my kids do anything for chocolate biscuits. So
you're absolutely right, though, Alistair, that there was nothing to gain from it. And in fact, they sold the farmhouse when James Irving died. And they had to sell it at a loss because of its reputation for being haunted. So there was no gain to be had there at all.
I don't think that we should discredit tiny little toads in velvet jackets and vampires frightened of rice, though. I still feel like those are good contenders.
I feel like that's good life advice, though. Like, we now know like what to do if we come across like Will o' the Wisp or something. And I feel like a lot safer now. And that's not even me being sarcastic. It's like genuinely good like life tips that I never learned at school.
And the utility
of rice. Carry around a pocket full of rice and you're fine.
But Holly, do we know why the vampires want to count rice? And secondly, is that the inspiration for the count from Sesame Street?
Yes.
I'd love that.
I thought that was just a pun on count, but yeah, it seems it is actually based on folklore. It loves to count.
I think somebody has genuinely asked that question of Sesame Street before, and the
will
creator.
You have the count on the folklore podcast?
I'd give it a go. I've got to get my bagpuss interview out of the way first, though. Until my bagpuss interview's done, I can't think about the count. So it's one children's TV classic at a time.
Two children's TV classics.
In terms of folklore, though, what do we feel about the tale of Many Coloured Sam?
That's fascinating.
Ah, that's nuts. That I love it.
I'm absolutely obsessed with it. I mean, I literally retraced the steps, and I've spent weeks and weeks and weeks finally tracking the woman down who doesn't want to reveal a name or anything.
Is it Patricia Wilnecker? Because
yes, it is.
Hang on, you've tracked the woman down, and she doesn't want to reveal her name.
No,
she's not the host of the Fairy Folk podcast.
It's all becoming clear. But yeah, she has agreed for me to go talk to her in 2 weeks' time.
Wonderful.
And when I spoke to her, our email exchange, she maintains absolutely that it's absolutely true. And she recounted the story to me. And when she recounted it, the basics of the story were there. the thing that kind of made me think something really weird did happen was the fact that the salient points were the same, but she freely admitted she couldn't remember everything, just some things that were not traumatic but really stand out things. And I, because I've got the transcript of the original story, you know, when it was reported, and I felt like if it was something that she'd made up, she would kind of remember everything that she said, or she'd have, you know, those bits of reference. It just felt to me really something legitimate happened, and I'm really obsessed with it. That, and as Holly knows, I'm kind of obsessed with an Isle of Wight folklorist, Abraham Elder, who doesn't seem to exist at all, but has had this book out. So there's these two things that I'm really obsessed with at the moment, and I'm thinking about them night and day.
Okay, I feel that we're going to have to move this on because we've passed the 90-minute mark, and with the best will in the world, we're never going to get this down to 20 for Icy's podcast if she puts it out in one episode. Before we move to voting, does anybody want to throw in one last comment to support or say anything about anything else that we've heard?
Can I just say that my people living in the strange swampland with all the terrors outside huddling in their homes, it just feels very 2020, and I feel for that reason at least that it should be for consideration.
I did actually think you were speaking about the last few months.
See, works perfectly.
It's a fair comment.
If we're talking topical, then I have to support my colleague, James, his story about a man who is just has clearly lied because he was late home to see his new wife time and time again, but has just had to double down and live the lie. Just plow on ahead doing what he knows is the wrong thing, but too proud to admit it.
That could be one of two people.
Okay, let's not take that one any further. we will move to voting. Okay, I'm going to come round all of you in turn, and I'm going to ask you to say which of the stories that we've heard this evening you would like to nominate as your favourite, just to remind you that you may not vote for yourself, and a very, very brief reason as to why you want to go with that story. And let's see who comes out on top. So, Paul, Tales of Whitlaw. Who would you like to choose?
I'm going with drinking out of skulls. That I loved it. That was fab.
So that's one for Bloody Mackenzie, the Edinburgh.
And the reason is whenever I hear people talking about drinking from skulls, I cannot for the life of me work out how you do it. Because it's going to come out the ear holes and the eyes and the nose. You wouldn't get a decent drink, but, you know.
Come out to Scotland for a drink, man.
Yeah. Logistically, from it's tricky.
I guess you'd use it like a teapot with the nostrils as a spout.
Everyone's going to be going off to try and work this out and have a go later on, I'm thinking.
I've already ordered my... I've already ordered a human skull from eBay, so...
Al's got one behind him. Al's got one behind him there that he can use, I think.
I'm drinking out of it. Can't refrigerate it either, so it's kind of a lost cause.
I have a friend who's actually got one made to drink out of, and they've basically take off the top of the head, and then there's this sort of hollow brain cavity in there, and that's been sealed with clay, and so you could drink out of that. But it's an actual human skull. It's dating back to the 1920s, and you take off the top and you drink from the brain cavity with a sort of a clay sealed area to drink from.
You want to get someone who's actually taken care to seal it with wax, and then maybe even kind of a scented wax to add another dimension.
For legal reasons, I should just say on behalf of anybody, if you're going to try drinking from a human skull at home, do sanitize first, as we said earlier. Hygiene is everything.
Happy birthday twice.
Okay, Rick from Law and Legend. Who would you like to vote for?
I'm going to vote for Will of a Wisp through a Pin's Head. That's my favourite piece of folklore this evening.
Excellent. Holly,
I've got like five favourites. I think I'm going to go for Springfield Jack just because I really like his style.
Fair enough. There's no better reason than that. Okay, Graham, Tales of the British Isles. Who gets your vote?
I'm going to go for the parrot King Arthur, really. I absolutely love that one. And I just see him dressed up as a parrot in a kind of LGBTQ plus icon, really. And I love it. I think it's wonderful.
It obviously speaks for itself because I didn't actually speak at all in defense of it.
It does. It absolutely holds up. King Arthur dressed as a parrot. I mean, I know you didn't say that bit, but yeah. Perfect image in my head, and I love it.
Awesome. David, who would you like to vote for?
So I was really interested in the whole, both the parrot story and the Mabinogian story, because there's so many layers and layers of symbolism there. And we only have fragments of what it actually meant to the people at the time who wrote it and why they wrote it and what it meant to them. And always found that, you know, deeply fascinating. But in terms of what I'm going to vote for, I'm going to vote for Springfield Jack because it's global. It has lasted centuries. I bought at the local comic book store, you know, a current comic made about Springfield Jack. It's still generating. And of course you have the clown, scary clown panics that are imitation of that same hoaxing process. You know, it's so pervasive. I think just for that reason, I'm going to vote Springfield Jack.
Very good. I see. You cannot vote for Springfield Jack. So who are you going to vote for?
I do love Nessie. I'm not going to lie. I've got a lot of love for Nessie, but I think I'm going to have to go for Bloody Mackenzie because he's the most heavy metal of all of them. And like, you know, normally I'm a lot more goth than this. Like, this is me wearing colour. So I'm going to have to go for him.
Fair enough. James, who would you like to choose?
I do like the parrot a lot. I did like, Summer Many Colours, that story, that could even be, I don't know if that's part of a Springfield Jack scary clown crossover, but I think it's the cars. It's got to be the cars and every single mythical beast that you can have. And just also a severed hand that pulls off people's hands.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
It's a self-replenishing severed hand system, James.
Yeah, it's got like a colony of spectral hands. Yeah.
You don't want to be one hand alone, do you? You want to get together.
Well, at least in a pair, I suppose.
Yeah. Then you can wear gloves.
Daniel,
I've got to go for the Mabinogian. I love it, old favourite. I've gone and wondered the parts of that story, and it's the whole thing of can you just show me exactly how you can be killed? You would think standing on the goat here. It's just great. Love it.
Perfect. Alistair, who gets your vote?
Likewise, I'm going to go with the Mabinogion, or Mabinogi, because mm-hmm. it's like a 20-hour long Monty Python film.
Yeah.
Everybody's name is insane. Oh, sorry, Welsh. And it's very entertaining.
Al, what appeals to Bone and Sickle?
Well, I can't vote for anything Welsh because I can't pronounce it. I'm gonna vote for the Sand of Many Colors, but I'm gonna advise Paul to leave a contact with someone before you do that interview. I'm worried.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, if you never hear from me again, then.
Well, we will at least know it's genuine if that's the case.
Yeah, exactly. Sean. Well, she was genuinely mad.
Well, that's also true. Sean, what do you reckon?
Patricia, my icon, my hero, Patricia.
Patricia. Okay, one for Patricia Wilnecker. You're just scared of the consequences if you don't vote for her.
No, I just love her. I just like want to be her, to be honest.
I'm not sure that you're not.
Give me a few decades. See.
Fairy Folk Podcast. Who gets your vote?
Oh, it's a tricky one. but I think I'm going to vote for the Mackenzie Poltergeist because I also remember being told that tale when I was in Greyfriars Kirkyard, and that was spooky then. But I thought Daniel's retelling was particularly spine-chilling, so I'm going to have to go for that.
Lovely. Thank you very much. That leaves one vote remaining, which is mine. And for me, purely from the air of mystery that it creates, and because I think that it has every part of the essence of a good piece of folklore, I'm going to go with The Tale of Many Coloured Sam as well, because it asks more questions than it answers, and I think that's the kind of folklore that leads to some great conversations like the one that we've had tonight. So the voting is cast, and by a margin of just one single little vote, our winning story is Bloody Mackenzie, the Edinburgh Poltergeist. So, Daniel from the House of Legends podcast. You are the victor of this little coming together of podcasts. Congratulations. Just like the Eurovision Song Contest, the next time we do this, you have to host it.
Okay. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thank you. And thank you to everybody. I mean, there are no winners or losers when we get together to tell these sorts of stories, I don't think. We've heard some fantastic tales tonight, some of them very, very well-known. Spring-Heeled Jack, the Mabinogion, Bloody Mackenzie, and definitely the Loch Ness Monster from the Fairy Folk podcast. They're all well known. They're all great stories. And then we've heard things like The Knight of the Parrot and The Tale of Any Coloured Sam, which are not so well known, but certainly bring some intrigue and some need for further investigation, which is what it's all about. So thank you all very much for coming together and doing this recording. There's certainly been a lot of interest from people on social media that we were doing this. I think it's been a great opportunity to put folklore firmly in the spotlight for all the right reasons, without having to release an album to do so. Thank you all for taking the time. On behalf of all of you, I will just say to everybody that I hope you enjoyed listening, and I will leave a short gap where you can all make an edit point to round off this in the way that you would like to do so in your own individual podcasts. Thank you all very much.
I hope you enjoyed this coming together of podcasts. It took a lot of organising, but it was great fun to record, and we do hope to do another sometime in the future. Going to wrap this episode up with some music again in a moment, because we haven't done that for a while. In the meantime, I told you earlier about a big event called Rural Gothic, which is coming up at the end of September. This takes place over the weekend of September the 28th and 29th, and features 10 presentations over 2 days via Zoom. A ticket is just £10, and that gets you access to absolutely everything. We have Rich Blackett discussing werewolves, Al Ridenour from Bone and Sickle podcast discussing foreign language folk horror films, Dr. Romany Regan on rituals and folklore in cemeteries, Hermetic Arts with a brand new film presentation, and a whole load more. Follow our Facebook or Twitter and you'll find all the details. You can also book and find out more by visiting bit.ly/ruralgothic. Please be aware that this event is proving extremely popular, and half the ticket allocation has already gone. So do visit soon if you don't want to miss out. Next week, we'll be looking at Appalachian folklore with my guests Asher Elbine and Tiffany Churell, the author and illustrator of the book Ghost Days. In the meantime, to play us out today, here is the band Strange Folk with a track called Under the Sun. You can find links to their work on our website on the page for this episode. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Thank you.
a chance.